الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى ما بعد. Okay, the next sort of area to focus on is how did the prophets call upon Allah Ta'ala when they were under stress or they were in stress? And I'm using a very broad category here. And of course, many of the prophets were under stress at different times, and there's many du'as that come. But there's just two or three that I thought it would be helpful for all of us to reflect upon. You know, how did they call on Allah? How did they speak to Allah Ta'ala when they were in a stressful situation? I think we're all, depending on where you are in life, maybe you have, I don't know, but most of us, most adults for sure, as you progress through life, you go through a lot of very difficult situations. That's the nature of life, is that every single human being, no one is spared from this, no matter their background, will go through difficulties, challenges, or find themselves in a situation where they feel that they're under some stress. And in those situations, it's essential that we communicate with Allah. It's essential that we communicate with Allah. Now, our tendency is, in that situation, just to beg Allah to get us out of that difficulty. And that's fair, because no one else can get us out of that difficulty but Allah, right? So it's fair to ask that. But let's just take a glimpse into what maybe the Prophets, alayhi wasalam, how they communicated with Allah Ta'ala when they were under a stressful situation. So we're going to talk first about one of the stories surrounding Musa alayhi salam. So Musa alayhi salam, we know his story somewhat, in that when he was an infant, his mother had to let him go into the river because at the time, all children were essentially being killed by Fir'aun, the Pharaoh. And when the wife of Fir'aun got a hold of Musa alayhi salam, she immediately developed an attachment to him. And Allah Ta'ala talks about this in the Quran. I'm just going through it very quickly. Attachment to him, and said, let's keep him. Let's not do away with him, let's keep him. So Musa alayhi salam was essentially raised in that setting, in the setting of a palace. He was almost, you can say, like the prince. In fact, you know, they say prince of Egypt. It kind of comes from Musa alayhi salam being raised in the palace of Fir'aun. So he was raised in that environment. He was, you can say, pampered in that environment. Imagine what life would be like if you were a prince in a palace, right? You get everything you want. You get all the foods, all the sights, all the sounds. It's a very comfortable way of living. And that's how Musa alayhi salam was raised. Now, the Quran talks about how there came a point, without going into detail, where he had left that environment. This is still before he was a prophet. It says, وَدَخَلَ الْمَدِينَةَ عَلَىٰ حِينِ غَفْلَةٍ مِّنْ أَهْلِهَا فَوَجَدَ فِيهَا رَجُلَيْنِ يَقْتَتِنَانِ. Musa alayhi salam left, and he left the city, and he had come across two people that were fighting with one another. They were in a fight with one another. هَذَا مِنْ شِيعَتِهِ وَهَذَا مِنْ عَدُوِهِ. And one was like an enemy of Musa alayhi salam, one was from his acquaintances. فَاسْتَغَاثَهُ الَّذِي مِنْ شِيعَتِهِ عَلَى الَّذِي مِنْ عَدُوِهِ فَوَكَزَهُ مُوسَى فَقَضَى عَلَيْهِ قَالَ هَذَا مِنْ عَمَلِ الشَّيْطَانِ. Quran talks about it. This is often the Quran, by the way. That Musa alayhi salam came and he intervened. And what did he do? He tried to, you can say, almost try to break up the fight a little bit. And in the process, inadvertently, he had brought harm upon the other person that was not the acquaintance of Musa alayhi salam, and he killed him. You could say he pushed him, shoved him, punched him, whatever it may be to, you know, get in the way and try to, and that person died. That person had passed away at the hands of Musa alayhi salam. You could almost think about it like, you know, in this day and age, you might call that like an involuntary manslaughter, essentially. قَالَ هَذَا مِنْ عَمَلِ الشَّيْطَانِ إِنَّهُ عَدُوٌ مُضِلٌّ مُبِينٌ. Now, what happens? That وَجَاءَ رَجُلٌ مِنْ أَقْصَى الْمَدِينَةِ يَسْعَى. The word got out that Musa alayhi salam killed this person. Now, this person happened to be someone who was from the, you can say, VIPs of that society. And as a result, all of the chiefs, all of the police, etc., now were after Musa alayhi salam because of this, the death of this person. So they are after him, hunting him down, trying to find him. The way, you know, you can almost say that the Prophet, when he was leaving Mecca, and there was 100 camels, you know, sort of bounty on him, they were hunting him down from every single way, and he had to hide. Musa alayhi salam had to hide and escape in the same way, because they were all out to get Musa alayhi salam. The Quran talks about this. فَخَرَجَ مِنْهَا خَائِفًا يَتَرَقَّبْ. That Musa alayhi salam, he left sort of in this state of fear, because think about it, you're now a fugitive, you didn't really do anything wrong, but you know, inadvertently something happened, and now everyone's trying to get you. You have the entire city and their chiefs, the police department, the FBI, everyone's out to get you, and there's a whole search warrant out for your arrest, or more, to kill you. فخرج منها خائفا يترقب. قال ربي نجيني من موسى عليه السلام leaves, he's like in a state of fear. ولما توجه تلقاء مدين, and he heads toward a city called مدين. He heads toward a city called مدين. He escapes as a fugitive and he goes toward the city called مدين. قال عسى ربي, ولما ورد ماء مدين, when he arrived in the city of مدين, وجد عليه أمة من الناس يسقون ووجد من دونهم امرأتين تزودان. He comes to the city of Madian and the big well, or you can say water area of Madian, and he's there and he finds two women who are there, and those two women are holding back their animals that they're taking to feed by the water. You may have heard this story. Now what's happening is that normally animals are taken to, let's say, that little pond or whatever it might be to be fed. And Musa alayhi salam sees these two women that are standing a bit of a distance away, and they're holding on to their animals, and their animals are trying to get to the water, and they're holding on to them with their reins, and they're not able to go. So Musa alayhi salam, again, he's just, this just happened, and now he's in this situation, and he asks them, like, what are you doing here? What's going on with you guys? Why are you not taking your animals there? And so they tell Musa alayhi salam, the Quran talks about this, that we can't go near that water, all the men are there right now. And, you know, the Mufassirun talk about the men, they may have ill intentions. They may be, you know, we don't want to go near them. They'd be howling at us. They may be whistling at us. And these are two women who had their animals, and they were holding them back, and they were waiting until the men fed all of their animals. And when the men cleared, then the women would go and then go toward that water. The Quran talks about this story. So Musa alayhi salam says, okay, don't worry about it. He takes the animals, he feeds them on her own, and then he gives them back to the women, to those two women. And then they take those animals back to their father. Now look at the scenario here. قَالَتَا لَا نَسْقِي حَتَّى يُصْدِرَ الرِّعَاءَ وَأَبُونَا شَيْخٌ كَبِيرٌ. The first question is, why are these two women here with their, all these men are there, what are these two women there? So the Quran says the women tell Musa alayhi salam, وَأَبُونَا شَيْخٌ كَبِيرٌ. Our father is really old, so we are responsible for this. This is our job, we're earning a livelihood for our family, so that's why we're here. So Musa alayhi salam fasqa lahuma thumma tawalla ila dhil. Musa alayhi salam takes those animals and he gives them the water that they need, and then he hands them back. Thumma tawalla ila dhil, and then he turns in the direction toward a shaded area. The Quran says this. And then he makes this statement. Thumma tawalla ila dhil. He goes toward the shaded area as soon as he turns, and then he makes this statement. It's a dua, and he calls upon Allah Subhanahu wa Ta'ala. And he says as follows. Rabbi inni لما أنزلت إلي من خير فقير. ربي إني لما أنزلت إلي من خير فقير. So let's look into the situation here. Musa alayhi salam is in a very tough situation. He's just escaped his city. They are the people of the city were trying to find him. He leaves. The Quran mentions فخرج منها خائف. He leaves the city in a state of fear. He's very fearful for what's going to happen. And the Mufassirun say he's not yet a prophet. He's in this state of extreme fear. And think about the background that he came from. Luxury, palace, life, had everything that he needed, everything he wanted to drink. And now he's in this situation. He has no water, no food to his name, no property to his name, no wealth whatsoever. He's essentially homeless. He's foodless. He's relationshipless. He's completely on his own. And now he arrives in this area of Madin where people are drinking water. He sees an opportunity to help two people out. He does so out of the good nature of his heart. He turns away and his reflection upon that moment. And then he makes a statement to Allah in this state of hopelessness and stress. He has nothing to his name at this point. Nothing to his name at this point. Then he makes a dua, and this time in Surah Al-Qasas, this whole thing is narrated. Rabbi inni lima anzalta ilayya min khayrin faqir. He turns and he makes dua to Allah, and he says, "O Allah, verily, it's interesting the way the Arabic is worded. I am for whatever you will send my way in desperate need. For whatever you will send my way in desperate need." Inni lima anzalta ilayya min khayrin faqir. Faqir, you know, faqr can refer in classically to like a broken back, like you can't do anything, right? So I'm a faqir, and in fact the Arabic is very interesting. Actually, we'll come back to that in just a moment. So this is what he says to Allah, that I am in need, I'm desperately in need, and whatever you will send my way. Now let's break this down, right? He calls upon Allah, Rabbi inni lima anzalta ilayya. Ma anzalta ilayya, ma ism mawsud. He's saying, whatever comes, whatever you'll send my way, I'll take. Whatever you'll send my, this is my desperate state. Whatever you will send my way, O Allah, I will take from you at this point. And he says, lima anzalta ilayya min khayr, from whatever is good. He's saying that I'm in a tough spot right now. I've I'm a fugitive. I left my town. I had all this to my name before, and now I'm penniless. I'm homeless. I'm relationshipless. I don't have anything. And I'm now looking for some sort of hope in life. And he turns to Allah. And what does he do? He says, whatever you will give me at this point, Ya Allah, I'll take. لِمَا أَنزَلْتَ إِلَيَّ مِنْ خَيْرٍ. Whatever you'll give me from what is best for me, I will take, and I'm desperately in need. Now, what's interesting is that the normal grammar would probably be, Rabbi inni faqirun lima anzalta ilayya. That, oh Allah, I'm in need of whatever you would give me. But what's happening is faqir is put at the end of the sentence to highlight not the faqir part of it, but the rest of it, which is Musa saying, whatever you'll give me, I'll take. Not I'm in need of whatever you'll give me, that's being highlighted. I am desperately in need of it. So what's interesting, number one, is that in this extremely stressful situation where Musa alayhi salam is desperately in need of help, support, finances, protection, security, you name it, there's no ask again. There's no ask. In fact, the story continues. فَجَاءَتْهُ إِحْدَاهُمَا تَمْشِي عَلَى اسْتِحْيَاءٍ. What happens? Musa alayhi salam makes this dua. These two women go back to their home. They tell their father about this kind soul that helped them when all these other men were ill-intentioned, or you know, it's like a scene where you wouldn't never want your wife, daughter, or mother to ever have to go to, right? As an environment that you wouldn't put them near. And father was so impressed that he sends one of them back to Musa alayhi salam, and he says, I want to hire you, and he hires him, and Musa alayhi salam worked with him for many years. He earned a living. He offered him one of his daughters, and Musa alayhi salam's life was completely reset. And the Quran uses, again, he says, without Musa alayhi salam asking a question, the Quran then narrates what happens and how Musa alayhi salam's complete situation is resolved as a consequence of this ask or this dua that he makes to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, are you understanding the picture here, the background, right? So, desperately in need, calls upon Allah and says, I will take whatever you will give me, right? So, number one, there's no specific ask in this. Musa alayhi salam is desperate. He shows Allah that he's so desperate, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is so appreciative of this call on him that he gives him what he needs. And Musa alayhi salam's attitude is interesting, because when we're in a tough situation, sometimes we want something very specific. We want something very specific. Musa alayhi salam, because we think we know what's best for us. And so we'll say, oh Allah, you know, if for instance I don't have, I have a job right now, but it's not the one I'm looking for, I'll say, oh Allah, give me a job that pays me more, and that's my constant dua, because I want that, you know. But I don't actually know if that's what's best for me. It's possible that if I get a job that's better, that maybe is a little bit more high paying, it's possible that I'll spend that money in the wrong things, and as a result of it, I'll get punished. Or it's possible that I'll get that job, and as a result of that job, I become a target for others, because now I'm someone of wealth. So now some criminals are targeting me, and my whole time I'm thinking about how am I supposed to protect my assets. We don't know. So Musa alayhi salam teaching us that when in a time of stress or difficulty or whatnot, when you're asking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, ask him because he knows what's best for you. Whatever he thinks is best for me, give it to me. Whatever he thinks is best for me. So when we're making our du'as as well to Allah, when we're in a stressful situation, oh Allah, this is where I am, this is how I am right now. Oh Allah, whatever is best for me, give that to me. Whatever is khayr for me, give that to me. Rabbi inni lima anzalta ilayya min khayrin faqir. Faqir is used here again. Again, Musa alayhi salam showing Allah, I'm desperately in need here. I don't know where else to turn. I don't know who else can help me. That desperation, the expression of desperation that we saw in Adam alayhi salam's dua, is manifested here as well. And the Quran talks about how Allah Ta'ala immediately, subsequently or consequently accepted his du'as in such a beautiful way. And he gave him a spouse. He gave him a livelihood. He gave him earnings. And that was the turning point of Musa alayhi salam's life. The simple du'a of, oh Allah, whatever comes from you, I'll take. Because I'm that desperately in need, and whatever you give me, I'll take. I'll give you another example of a stressful situation. Let's look at the life of Prophet Ayyub alayhi salam. You've heard Prophet Ayyub? This is the Prophet of Allah alayhi salam, who was extremely, extremely blessed for a very long period of time. Ayyub alayhi salam, he was well off. And put yourself in the situation, right? Just imagine what you would do. He was very well off, very wealthy. He had a very large family. He had a wife. Her name was Rahma. He had, some narrations mentioned, 14 children. Very, everything you can imagine. Large estate, large property. And according to the time, he had cattle and livestock that you would otherwise say this person's very wealthy and very well off and is the, you know, the envy of the rest of the community. That was Ayyub alayhi salam. He was a prophet of Allah. Now what happens? The Quran talks about this in a bit of detail, but slowly by slowly by slowly, he starts to lose these things. First, he was given health for like 70 years. His health was taken away. And he was afflicted with a very severe disease. And at the time, they felt it was contagious. And at the time, if someone was very sick and you could see that sickness on their body, maybe they had pores on their skin or whatnot, they would remove them, you know, quarantine them. Quarantine them. Sorry to use that word. Might strike some, trigger your heart rate. But quarantine them for a period of time or indefinitely. He was quarantined off. Furthermore, later, it was said that some sort of quake or something had happened, and his structure that he had housed his family in had completely collapsed, and all 14 of his children had died. All 14 children had died. So he loses his health, he loses his social support because everyone has now removed him from society and said, we don't want to have anything to do with you, even despite, let's forget about all the past, nothing, send him out. Then something tragic happens and he loses all of his children as well. And he also loses his entire estate and all of his property. So now he's left by with his wife, the severe illness or sickness for which he's quarantined, and he's out in the middle of nowhere, and this is his situation. And in fact, this is a side point, but one narration mentions that his wife, Rahma, he was so, you know, he was so careful of complaining to Allah. You and I, by this point, we would have made 18 du'as daily, right? Like, what is this? Like, what in the, I mean, complaint after complaint after complaint. And it's not that we can't complain to Allah. I'll talk about that in just a moment. But he was very shy of complaining to Allah of anything. His wife, Rahma, had asked him that, you know, you've gone through so much. Why don't you just ask Allah to change things around for you at this point? I mean, you've, like, what? This is as bad as it gets. He got very upset. He said, how many years did Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala keep me well for? She said, 70 years. How many years now, total, have I been afflicted with this? And he said, well, 7 years. He said, that Allah that took care of me for 70 years, I'm going to complain to him about something that I've been struggling with for just a few years? Anyways, just fast forwarding. Eventually, he calls on Allah. He calls on Allah. Now look at the wording that he uses. This, the adab by which he interacts with Allah through all of this incredible trial and tribulation that you and I would never be able to imagine happening to us. One child is a big deal. 14, right? Losing, you know, a bit of money and investment, big deal. All of your wealth and property and estate, okay? You know, you can have a couple of diseases, high blood pressure, diabetes, but being so affected by this illness that the narrations mention he was essentially paralyzed, couldn't move. And not only that, this like social isolation that's now been created because of this illness, saying you're contagious. So he calls upon Allah. Wa Ayyub, Quran mentions this in the Quran. Allah mentions this in the Quran. Wa Ayyuba idh nada rabbahu. When Ayyub in this situation called upon his Lord, what did he say? What did he say? What do you want to say? Go ahead. Excellent. So he says, Ayyuba idh nada rabbahu, when he called upon his Lord, he said, Anni masani al-dhur. Indeed, some difficulty has touched me. Wa anta arhamur rahimin, but you are the most merciful of those who show mercy. That was his calling to Allah. Now look, Anni masani al-dhur, he's saying, it must in Arabic, it means to like, it's like the lightest form of touch. Not, I've been crushed, pounded, afflicted. No, I've been touched with a bit of a difficulty. Right? Now, the next thing you would expect him to say, so take me out of this. That's his adab. He says, but you are the most merciful of those who show mercy. Turned it back to Allah. Like, this shyness that he has is clear in this call to his Lord. One, he wants to be very mindful of the wording that he's using when he's telling Allah about the problem. And by the way, I think we'll talk about this, it's acceptable to complain to Allah about yourself and complain about your sadnesses and your difficulties to Allah. But the adab by which he expresses this to Allah, it's very delicate. And then he turns it and says, but ultimately, arhamur rahimina, rahim, in the Arabic language, means to like, refers to like the womb of the mother, which is that place where no child has to worry about anything, right? I mean, an infant, a fetus in the womb of the mother, that's the one time in your life, maybe when you're an infant also, but you have zero concern. I mean, everything is fully taken care of for you. And that's where the word rahmah comes from. That Allah is so merciful that he takes care of his creation. So he's using this, wa anta arhamur rahimin, that you are, you know, the most merciful of those who show mercy. It's interesting. Again here, what's missing? There's no ask from Allah. Well, let's pause here. What's the next ayah? فَاسْتَجَبْنَا لَهُ. What does that mean? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala immediately responds to this call. You say, well, the dua is not over yet. He still has to ask for what he needs. He still needs, relieve my sickness, relieve my calamity, give me back my wealth, my property. فَاسْتَجَبْنَا لَهُ فَكَشَفْنَا مَا بِهِ مِنْ ضُرْ. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala relieves him of this difficulty. وَأَهْلَهُ وَمِثْلَهُ مَعَهُمْ رَحْمَةٌ مِنْ عِنْدِنَا وَذِكْرَى لِلْعَابِدِينَ. وَذِكْرَى لِلْعَابِدِينَ comes at the end. And he gives him back his family, his wealth, everything comes back to him when Ayyub alayhi salam calls us back. And we know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave him another family that was comfortable. He cured him of his complete illness. فَكَشَفْنَا مَا بِهِ مِنْ ضُرْ. And he relieved him of all of this. So all was completely reversed after this call to Allah. وَذِكْرَى لِلْعَابِدِينَ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, why? As a reminder for the worshippers of Allah. This is the power of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, especially when the servant calls on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And when dhikra is like mubalagha, it means like, he could have just said, this is a reminder for the believers, but dhikra is like a great reminder for all of the believers, for all of those who worship Allah. A great reminder for all of them. Now, what's interesting, wa anta arhamur rahimin, you could say, if I'm like, okay, let me give you an analogy here. How, just to show how, the mechanism that Ayyub alayhi salam is using, it's so beautiful, right? He's telling Allah that this has happened to me. Let me ask you this. If your child comes to you, you have a 5-year-old, and comes to you and says, Baba, I got hurt. Are you gonna, what's your response going to be? Are you gonna say, okay, and? So, what? Okay, what do you want me to do? You want me to look at it? You want me to... If your child comes to you and says, you know, you have a 4-year-old and says, I'm really hungry. What are you going to say? Are you going to say, are you going to wait for them to say, okay, but I'm really hungry and that means I need to eat something, so can you please give me food? It's implied. It's implied because of the relationship. A father has incredible rahmah over a child, has mercy toward their child, and a mother even more so. That when you hear that your child needs something, or there's, when your child is complaining of something, you're going to rush toward resolving that issue. You're not going to ask them, what specifically is it that you're looking for? If you're hurt, you're going to say, oh, show me where. Okay, I see this here. Okay, let me take care of this. Because the mercy of the parent is to address the problem of the child the minute they hear any hint of worry in their voice. And the mercy of the mother and the father, again, any time there's any need that the child has and it's presented before the parent, the mercy of the parent is such that it always tries to address it immediately without there ever being an ask of the child. Now that's the love that exists between a parent and a child. But the love that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has for the believers is far deeper than that. It's far deeper than that. So when we are presenting ourselves to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the difficulties and the challenges that we face, it doesn't necessarily require a request afterward. Oh Allah, I'm yours. I'm your servant. I mean, a child, it's my child. I have to address whatever issue they have. And the servants of Allah are the same way. He says, أَنِّي مَسَّنِيَ الضُّرُّ. But you know, you're the most merciful of merciful. So there's so much to take from this, right? That presentation is so powerful that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accepted it. And what is, so similarly for us as well. When we're in a desperate situation, faced with trial or difficulty and things like that, yes, there's du'as that specifically ask for how to relieve this affliction. But Look at the way that these two prophets alayhi wasalam presented this. Look at the response of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and look at the humility by which they called upon Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in both situations. Neither of which specifically had a request or an ask. So what are some practical takeaways from this? The first takeaway is that when we're in need, both the first and the last place we should turn to is Allah. We see this from Musa alayhi salam, right? Rabbi inni lima anzalta ilayya min khayrin faqir. I'll take whatever you give me, O Allah. And he immediately turned to Allah. Look, the reason I say first and last is because sometimes, let's say we need, we want to have a child, right? The first place we should ask from is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala before we go to the means that are necessary. And then once we've taken those means, we should also turn back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as well. And again, say, oh Allah, I've done what I've needed to do. And then put the ball back in Allah's court. Because ultimately, even though Allah ta'ala has created this world in such a way that there's asbab, and there are means by which things occur, ultimately the true fa'il haqiqi and the doer of all of these things that will make things happen is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Musa alayhi salam is teaching that right away. That go to Allah, and whatever it is that you and I need, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will absolutely give it. For in terms of a dunya, whether it's a job or relief of a stress or a child or whatever it may be, we always have to turn to Allah ta'ala both at the beginning and at the end. The second sort of take home point, sometimes we don't know what's best for us. And when we're calling on Allah, sometimes we may be too specific. Yeah, okay, what is one thing that absolutely we should have no hesitation about? Guidance, right? But especially for our akhirah, fine. But for our dunya in particular, right? We don't know what's best for us. And if you've gone through life, you and I know that all the things that we thought were best for us end up not necessarily being what's best for us, oftentimes. So when we're calling upon Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as well, it's really important to include within that dua and that supplication, that, oh Allah, whatever is best for me, grant me that. Give me whatever is best for me. Or something simply as, you know what is best for me. I'm your servant. I am your slave. You know what's best for me. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, out of his mercy, will take care of things. Rather than being so specific, I mean, we all know millionaires who are miserable. And we all know people who are, you know, middle or low income, who are the most content people. Right? I mean, it's just, we've seen it now. We don't know if what resources Allah has put in this earth are necessarily, I know medical students, people who work their life making dua for and asking to get into medical school, finally got into medical school, and it was perhaps the worst thing that could have happened to them. And I know people who did whatever they could to get into medical school. It didn't happen for them. They went a different route, and it was probably the best thing that could have happened for them. So, yes, we should, I mean, apparently what appears to be good for us, we should ask from Allah. But more generally speaking, we should ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for good and khair rather than being very specific and being caught up in that specificity. The third sort of take-home point from this, a core feature between these two du'as is that both Ayyub alayhi salam and Musa alayhi salam, they fully understood who Allah was and who they are. And this differential is essential when it comes to us worshiping Allah and of course calling upon Allah. Meaning, look, like, I mean, this is a very long topic, so maybe I shouldn't go into it, but the more I can understand who Allah is in relationship to who I am, the more it'll enable me to converse with him. Musa alayhi salam turns to Allah and says, Rabbi inni lima anzalta ilayya min khayrin faqir. He expresses this complete state of desperation by one, calling himself a faqir, and two, saying, whatever you'll give me, I will take. Because that's how perfect you are. I don't have to, I have full trust in what you send down to me. And I will take it. And Ayyub alayhi salam, full trust when he presents himself to Allah and says, "Anni masani al-dur." At that point, is he worried that maybe Allah is going to afflict me with more harm and difficulty and make my life even more miserable? No. He has full trust that if it's coming from Allah, it's what's good for me. And if a slight another difficulty comes on me, because it's from Allah, I'm going to receive it. This differential is essential for us to understand who Allah is and where we stand. Because if we can capture in our own lives and internalize how insignificant I am and how significant Allah is, then the entire conversation with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala changes. And our du'as and our supplications will change as well. So with that, inshallah, I'll conclude. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us the adab to be able to communicate with Him when we're under stress and difficulty. I'll mention one more point. There's one du'a that I think it's really important to mention here, that it's not a du'a, but it's a description of a reflection of Ya'qub alayhi salam in the Quran. So we know Ya'qub was a prophet whose father was Yusuf alayhi salam. And if there was a prophet who underwent incredible difficulty, Ayyub alayhi salam, of course, the Prophet salam, of course, but we think about Yusuf alayhi salam. And we're going to talk about Yusuf later today in the next session. But his father Ya'qub was so affected by the loss of one son. Now, it's interesting because you see the difference here. You see Ayyub, السلام, 14 sons, has nothing to say, right? 14 children that passed away. Ya'qub, السلام, one son who's not dead, but he's separated from him. And he's so afflicted by this. وَبْيَضَّتْ عَيْنَاهُ مِنَ الْحُزْنِ He loses his eyesight because of his sadness of losing his son, Yusuf, السلام. And when the second time around, I'm summarizing the story, the second time around when he finds out that now he's even, let's not go there. He makes a statement, the Quran quotes this. He says to his other sons, who are, you know, the plotters behind this whole scheme of why Yusuf is separated from him, he says, قَالَ إِنَّمَا أَشْكُو بَثِّي وَحُزْنِي إِلَى اللَّهِ This is not a quote of the dua that he made to Allah, but he tells them that I can only and I'm only going to present my complaints and my sadness to Allah. Very interesting, right? Because you'd say, well, should he be saying anything to Allah? And what's really interesting with the whole story of Ya'qub alayhi salam is that who's the model of patience in the Quran? Ya'qub alayhi salam. فَصَبْرٌ جَمِيلٌ It keeps coming. So he's patient and he's known to be the patient model, and yet he's someone who is really bothered by the loss of his son. The emotional response just is beyond, right? And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is quoting him in the Quran when he says, I'm complaining and presenting my complaints to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What I'm trying to highlight here is that Ya'qub alayhi salam was never complaining to Allah about his situation. He was never saying, why did you do this to me, O Allah? Why did you take my son away? I'm a prophet of Allah. Why would you do this to me? I've been following your every single command up until this point. Rather, أَشْكُ بَثِّي وَحُزْنِي The emotional natural reaction that happens to any person when they undergo trial or difficulty or tribulation, that sadness, that grief, sometimes even that burning sensation, those are being channeled to Allah because he's saying, I have no one else that I can talk to in this trial except to Allah. And that's completely acceptable. It's different than complaining to Allah. Rather, channeling my own complaints about myself and my grief and presenting it to Allah are two different things. So may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us the ability to understand these principles. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala alleviate our trials and tribulations in the best way for us. Wa akhir da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Okay, any questions on this? I know it's a little bit heavy, but I hope, inshallah, we've been able to take something from it. Yeah, that's a great question. The question is, how do I chant, make sure my heart is present during du'as? It's a tough question. It's similar to how, you know, the question comes up, how do I establish khushu' in my salah? It's a very similar question. It's the state of the heart outside of the du'a that's going to determine what your heart's going to be like in du'a. And if the heart is exposed to corrupt things outside of the du'a, it's going to be really tough to connect with the heart when you're making du'a to Allah. So really guarding the heart and protecting it from those things that affect it in a negative way is critical to this. The second thing is that sometimes Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts you in a situation where the heart is just softened and it becomes easier to make du'a. And we should take advantage of those opportunities. I'll give you two examples. One, the end of Ramadan. The heart is soft because it's been controlled, suppressed. The nafs have been completely suppressed and the heart is soft. And it's a lot easier because of the softness of the heart to make du'a, especially in the last sort of few days of Ramadan. A second is when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala presents a person with a trial or a difficulty, it's a lot easier to have deep, intimate conversations. Now, what's beautiful about it is You want to take advantage of that. You want to use that as an opportunity to learn what you know about yourself at that moment and make dua accordingly, like how vulnerable you are. And look how close you feel when you want to make dua to Allah in this desperate state, so that when you're outside of that moment of desperation, you can call on Allah Ta'ala in a very similar way. So what I'm trying to say is, you sometimes get to wait for that opportunity. Once it strikes, you seize it, you learn from it, and then you use that so that you can make that dua outside as well. Yeah, so the question, it depends on what you're... So if the question is like matters of the dunya, oh Allah, give me a house with a white picket fence that's 4,000 square feet, and I need a Tesla that has black rims that's white, and yeah, that's a problem. Because we don't know if any of those things are going to be a cause for benefit for us or a cause for harm for us. When it comes to things that are, let's say, angelic, yeah, we ask from Allah, for instance, things like Jannah, things like protection from the fire of hell, hisab, yeah, or something that's very obvious, for instance, the tawfiq to come to the masjid consistently, like acts of worship. Those things, we can be specific. Now, you don't have to, but you can be. Just like conversing with Allah, it's your relationship with Allah ultimately. And before you go and tell everyone else about all the problems in the world, it's better to speak with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala first. And in fact, probably hold back discussing all of that with the rest of the world. Yes, you can do that. So for instance, oh Allah, this job offer is here. Allah, if this is what's best for me in this life and the akhirah, please grant it to me. Absolutely, absolutely. Rather than just say, oh Allah, I need this job, give me this job. I'm telling you, this is the right one. This is the right fit for me. I can see it. I see it. That's a problem, because Allah knows what we don't know. And we've seen it enough, you know, to know that's the case. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, this is a great point. I'm glad you brought it up. Two things. The way you feel about something, you're not going to be held accountable for. Okay? So, for instance, if you really wanted to get into, you wanted to get into Harvard, and Allah put you at Princeton, right? And deep down inside, you're like, man, okay, that's a feeling. And that's acceptable, and the deen is not going to hold you accountable for that. But when I'm making dua to Allah and conversing with Allah, you can express, oh Allah, I thought this was best for me. This feeling is in my heart. But ya Allah, thank you for protecting me from potentially what was harmful for me. Thank you for this incredible opportunity that you gave me instead. You clearly know what's best for me. So your expression verbally, your heart as it communicates to Allah is in that way. But the emotion doesn't have to match up with it. And sometimes we get caught up in that. And I can't tell you, maybe 10 times a week, people come to me and ask me, I'm exaggerating, but enough, where it's like, but I don't feel, you know, the way I should be. Forget the feelings. The deen is not going to hold you accountable for your feelings, right? It's the a'mal and the deeds that are essential. No, that's not what I said. I said you start by asking for Allah's help. You end by asking for Allah's help. And you, in between, you use the means that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created, right? And that includes people. That includes people. That's the way Allah designed it. But to think that these people are the reason that I'm being helped, that's the problem. But to think these people are a mechanism that Allah has designed to help me, that's the attitude to have. Does that make sense? Yeah. Correct, yeah. And that's a problem, to not take the means that Allah... Some people think, well, no, I'm just going to trust in Allah. That's actually a sign of mistrust and misunderstanding of how Allah operates. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is ultimately the doer. So even if the physician is the one who helps you, it's not the physician, it's the shifa Allah put in their hands and in the medications they've provided. So we're in a way obligated to use the means that Allah has created.